Welcome to another ABC Radio National podcast. For more information, go to abc.net.au/rn.
Hello, you're listening to The Health Report with me, Norman Swan. In this program, a special feature on a group of people in Australia without whom our healthcare system would collapse, and yet whom we only tend to hear about when something bad happens. The Patel case in Bundaberg did nothing for the reputation of overseas trained doctors, who can be found in every medical occupation in the land, from big hospitals in big cities to solo practices in remote country towns. On the other side, the story of the Victorian rural physician who was rejected by the immigration authorities because of his child with Down syndrome illustrates how desperate communities are to attract doctors and keep them. But what you're about to find out is that Australia often doesn't look after overseas trained doctors very well, and appears to put needlessly complicated, demeaning and expensive barriers in their way. The Health Report's Nikki Phillips has been investigating.
For decades now, overseas trained doctors have saved our healthcare system from ruin because Australia has failed to train enough doctors of its own. Despite this, you'll be surprised to hear how little support these doctors receive. Many have no access to Medicare or public education for their children. Instead, they have to spend thousands of dollars, can wait years to gain registration, and often receive little support to gain further qualifications. But hey, welcome to Australia.
I brought initially $40,000. All I have spent for this whole process, I can't pay any more money.
If you knew that getting registration in Australia would be so difficult, do you think you would have come?
No.
Did you ever consider going back to Canada during this process?
Yes. It took me 2.5 years between the time that I started the registration accreditation process to the time when I actually started practicing.
It was a very, very busy practice. I had very little support from my employer. Always pushed me to see more patients, which I basically just resisted.
We've had a doctor shortage for a long time in rural and remote Australia. It's estimated that we have about 1,000 GPs that we need, fairly dire.
That was Kim Webber, the CEO of Rural Health Workforce Australia. Workforce agencies recruit overseas trained doctors to work in rural Australia. And the doctors speaking before her are not alone in their frustrations. Yet the reality is, rural and remote Australia still suffer from potentially dangerous doctor shortages. Now, this program is not about compromising patient safety. Overseas trained doctors should have their qualifications tested, be able to speak a high level of English, and have adequate training. No one is disputing this. Doctors come to Australia in a variety of ways. Some are headhunted by communities desperate for a doctor. Some come for working holidays. Others fill teaching positions, and some are even fleeing their homelands. So what happens when doctors decide they want to work in Australia? First of all, any doctor who wants to practice here, local or overseas trained, must be registered with a state or territory medical board. Registration with a medical board shows the public that a doctor has been trained to a national standard and is both competent and fit to practice. While registration allows a doctor to practice, immigration status restricts where they can get a job. Temporary residents must practice in an area of workforce shortage indefinitely. Even after doctors become permanent residents, they are still required to work in a workforce shortage area for up to 10 years, and often these areas are in rural or remote Australia. In 2006, the Council of Australian Governments decided that all states should follow the same rules for overseas trained doctors to practice. But that hasn't sorted out all the problems, and as you will soon hear, differences still exist between the states. There are three main hurdles overseas trained doctors face: registration and assessment, the costs involved in the whole process, and the limited support offered once doctors are registered. So imagine you're an overseas trained doctor. You and your family are moving to Australia. First, you need to gain registration, and the type most doctors want is general registration. It means doctors can seek permanent residency, and it shows they have the same clinical knowledge as an Australian medical graduate. But to complicate it further, some states like Queensland and South Australia have specialist registration for specialist doctors as a separate type of registration. Are you with me so far? Well, it's about to get more complicated. For overseas trained doctors to gain general registration, they need to follow one of three pathways: the specialist pathway, the competent authority pathway, or the standard pathway. Now, the specialist pathway is for doctors who are just that, specialists: surgeons, obstetricians, cardiologists, and people who have trained as general practitioners, because general practice is considered a specialty in Australia. The standard pathway is for non-specialist GPs. That's doctors who are GPs in their own country but don't have specialist GP qualifications. The final pathway, the competent authority, is for doctors who've trained at a competent authority medical school. These schools have medical degrees that are considered close to or equivalent to ours. Doctors that qualify in the UK, Ireland, Canada, the US and New Zealand are considered from a competent authority. But for the sake of this program, from now on we'll be concentrating on the standard pathway for non-specialist GPs. The first thing a doctor following the standard pathway must do is have their qualifications verified with the Australian Medical Council. The AMC is the national accreditation body that verifies doctors' qualifications and assesses non-specialists. Doctors also need to pass an English proficiency exam if they didn't study their medical degree in English. The final step for standard pathway doctors is the Australian Medical Council certificate, which doctors can get by completing the AMC exams. So what are the AMC exams? Well, there are two: the multiple choice questions exam and a clinical exam. The MCQ tests medical knowledge and is similar to the exam given to local graduates. Once the MCQ is complete, doctors may apply for conditional registration. Conditional registration allows doctors to practice under certain restrictions before they have gained general registration. But rules around this differ from state to state. Some states, like Queensland, require that doctors have a job before they are given conditional registration. But even conditional registration has its delays. Dr. Turek Al-Abdi is an area of need doctor working in Dorrigo in country New South Wales. He had been practicing for 4 years in Sydney as an intensive care doctor before moving back to general practice. Turek applied for an area of need position with conditional registration back in February. But he faced delay after delay and was finally able to start practicing in August.
I came here early February to Dorrigo. I spent a couple of days and I decided that I would love to come and work here. And then we lodged an application with the medical board. Maybe that was in mid-February. Then I waited about 90 days just to have an interview with the medical board, then take another 2 months to process the paper and sending forms and have another interview to assist my English. So it takes about 8 months.
Not all doctors have experiences like Dr. Al-Abdi, but he's not alone in his frustrations. But now, back to the quest for general registration. The second AMC exam is the clinical. This exam tests the doctor's clinical skill and involves a mix of real patient examinations and role plays. Again, all standard pathway doctors need to sit this exam if they want to get general registration. Remember, general registration allows doctors to become permanent residents, apply for further qualifications, and work unsupervised. But wait, there's an exception to this rule. Some doctors who only intend to stay in Australia for a limited amount of time aren't required to sit the clinical, and that means they won't progress past conditional registration. But again, there's a difference. Some states, like Queensland, insist that if a doctor wants to continue practicing, they must progress towards general registration. In states like New South Wales, you can stay on conditional registration forever. For the most part, doctors want general registration, so the clinical exam is a necessity. But this is where a huge bottleneck forms, causing many overseas doctors serious frustration. Retired GP Chris Butt, who currently teaches English to overseas doctors, explains.
The process is quite a long and arduous one, unfortunately. There are three main steps. They have to pass an English test, then they have to pass a written examination, and then they have to pass some form of clinical assessment, which is at the moment up in the air as to exactly what form that is. So the whole process takes most of them about 2 years.
And the English test that you train them for is valid for 2 years, isn't it?
Correct. Only for 2 years. And if they haven't completed their accreditation by the end of that time, they have to do it again.
So are you finding that?
Absolutely. Lots of students are coming back, ringing me up saying, Chris, I know I passed 2.5 or 3 years ago, but could you give me a little bit of coaching just to get me up to speed again because I have to do the test again.
And why are they having to do it again?
The main reason they're having to do it seems to be because of the delays that are inherent within the system of their further recognition. The written examination called the MCQ, there's not too much of a delay with that. Most people can get in within a reasonable time, within a couple of months or so of when they want to. Then they have to wait for a very long time before they get the clinical examination appointment. Generally speaking, 12 months, sometimes 15 months, perhaps even longer, from when they pass their written exam to when they're given an appointment for their clinical exam. It's the delay in the whole process that's the problem. You see, we don't want to reduce the standards of the English or standards of medicine. What we want to do is to make the process a more user-friendly.
One of the main difficulties with the clinical exam is the availability of examiners. Examiners must be registered doctors who are up to date with current clinical training and practice. Because of this, Ian Frank, the CEO of the Australian Medical Council, discusses possible alternatives to the clinical exam. Remember, it's the AMC's job to verify doctors' qualifications and assess non-specialists.
Well, the key problem really is people. Because there's only a finite number of people out there who can conduct these examinations. We're examining 1,000 candidates a year. These are people who are also, usually, teaching for universities, working in hospitals, often working for the specialist colleges as well, and there's only so much time you can actually take out of the system for these people. So what we have to do is come up with a much more efficient system.
What are these alternative ways?
Well, if you look at the AMC website, we talk about a series of pathways that are being developed, and one of the pathways now is what we're calling the workplace-based assessment pathway. This is a thing that's come out of the Council of Australian Governments, the COAG initiative on IMG assessment that was announced in sort of mid-2006, where they were trying to develop consistent national standards. It recognised that given the limitations on the AMC clinical exam, we need to find alternative ways in which we could conduct the clinical examinations. And so the proposals we're working on at the moment are to try and develop systems where, for example, people who come to work in area of need positions in Australia, that we can give them the MCQ exam, which can be done onshore or offshore, and when they come in and take up their positions, we can work together with the jurisdictions and with other key stakeholders to undertake the clinical assessment in their workplace setting, rather than to pull them out of the workplace and put them through an artificially created examination, as the current AMC clinical examination is.
When doctors do finally complete their clinical examination, it's not all over. They still must complete 12 months supervised training, just like a local medical graduate. And after that, a doctor can gain general registration. But hold on, I'm about to add another layer of complexity to the story. Accountability of the key bodies involved. These include the medical boards, whose responsibility it is to ensure a doctor is fit to practice, the AMC, the English exam centres, and we haven't even discussed the specialist colleges that assess specialist doctors. Many overseas doctors feel the key organisations are laws unto themselves, and overseas trained doctors are scared of speaking out against them. But Secretary of the Joint Medical Board's Advisory Committee, Andrew Dix, rejects the claim that key authorities are uncensored.
I don't think there's a lack of transparency. The information's all available, and decisions are, well, certainly in New South Wales, I think in every jurisdiction, appealable to a medical tribunal or some other body, and that option is always open to an international medical graduate if they feel that they've been somehow or other harshly dealt with.
There have been a lot of changes made to the registration process in the last few years, and it's made it, I suppose, considerably tougher for overseas trained doctors to gain registration. Does that have anything to do with the Bundaberg incident with Dr. Patel?
I think a lot of the changes that are being brought in were underway before that occurred. I have no doubt that there have been a couple of cases which have sharpened the focus, but there has been an intention to simplify, but also to make more rigorous the process and to come up with a nationally consistent scheme as well. So that happened before Bundaberg, but Bundaberg has been an accelerator, I guess.
That was Andrew Dix, Secretary of the Joint Medical Board Advisory Committee. And as part of the Council of Australian Governments initiative for national assessment of overseas trained doctors that I mentioned earlier, national registration for all doctors in Australia, local or overseas trained, will be rolled out in 2010. Sue Douglas is a GP trained in Canada. She came to Australia to take up a position as a senior lecturer in general practice at the ANU. 2 years later, she was still not able to practice medicine in Australia. Sue had applied for registration along the specialist pathway, but the Specialist College for GPs refused to recognise her Canadian qualifications because she completed her exam 2 years before Australia started recognising the Canadian degree. So incensed by the Australian system to assess and register overseas trained doctors, or international medical graduates, as they're sometimes called, Sue wrote a report. Here's what she found.
There's a number of challenges and issues and problems that have been identified with these accreditation organisations. The three major accreditation organisations here in Australia are the specialist colleges, the ANC and the medical boards. There's been at least 10 government reports done over the last 20 years that have identified a range of problems. These reports seem to get shelved, not acted upon, and I think with the move from the government to establish a national system, this is a really good opportunity for them to get those reports out, dust them off, and take a look at what's actually stated inside and actually develop a system whereby the accreditation criteria and standards are valid. They're not marred by conflict of interest. There's much better improved accountability of these organizations because right now some of the organizations, particularly the specialist colleges, is next to no accountability outside the college membership. And that's really frightening given that the actual responsibilities these organizations have for basically approving or disapproving people to practice medicine in Australia.
That was Sue Douglas, a Canadian GP working in the ACT. Once a doctor is allowed to practice unconditionally, the problems don't stop. Many overseas trained doctors receive little support once they've cleared the hurdles of registration. The hypocrisy of it all is that a lot of overseas trained doctors were encouraged to come to Australia to work because we have a doctor shortage. But where a doctor can work and live often isn't their choice. Doctors who aren't permanent residents or citizens aren't entitled to a Medicare provider number unless they work in an area of workforce shortage. A provider number is an identity tag that's given to doctors and their location. So if a doctor works at two different hospitals, they would have two provider numbers. No provider number, no billing to Medicare as a private practitioner. So temporary resident doctors have no choice but to work in an area of need. But these areas can be seriously remote and a huge cultural shock. One doctor from South Africa, who asked to remain anonymous, describes his first experience at a practice in rural Tasmania.
The whole process of me actually being allowed to work there was very simple. Well, I reckon the reason for that was because they could not find another doctor to work there, certainly not an Australian doctor. There had been a high turnover of doctors there, and there was one person working in that practice with about 8,000-9,000 patients on the books. So it was a very, very busy practice. I had very little support from my employer, basically just always pushed me to see more patients, which I basically just resisted. Academical support, all that stuff, totally non-existent. And also no support from any rural workforce agencies or anything. No support whatsoever. It was basically left up to myself to do the exams, etc., etc. During periods where I had to study, no locum was arranged. I still had to work and still come home at night and then have to study. Very, very difficult.
I know you've moved on now to another practice. Has anything changed?
Yes, things get a lot easier when you don't have the stress. I would always describe this whole process, if it feels like a sword hanging over your head the whole time. There's always in the back of your mind, doesn't matter what you do, there's always this stress that you've got to pass more exams, more exams, more exams. The day when all that goes away, I mean, you can deal with heavy workloads and that a lot easier. So that's the first thing, but certainly the practice where I work at now, the support and that for overseas doctors and that, I mean, there's no comparison compared to the previous practice. Well, I wouldn't say massive support, but a lot more support.
I think there is insufficient support for overseas trained doctors.
CEO of Health Workforce Queensland, Chris Mitchell, and before him, a GP in rural Tasmania. Chris Mitchell and his team work hard to recruit and retain doctors in rural areas, but it can be very difficult to get them to stay, despite the support they receive to move to Australia.
We provided a lot of support to get through the immigration processes, to help with the medical board registration, the placements, the orientation at a statewide national level. Now, that's part of it. The support services for an international medical graduate to gain their fellowship is a whole other level of support required. Now, I believe at the moment that is totally insufficient. We need to do a lot more to get those international medical graduates up to fellowship level.
Fellowship is what is awarded to doctors when they sit their college exams. Gaining fellowship shows that a doctor has achieved a certain standard in their specialty. It's good for patient safety that doctors sit these exams, and those who attain fellowship can access higher Medicare rebates for their patients.
An Australian trained graduate will be able to go through a general practice training program, and there are training programs right throughout Australia.
And that's funded by the government?
And that's funded by the government, and then if you go rural, there are incentive payments that are paid as well. Now, the quantum that is provided for those graduates is tenfold more than what we would go anywhere near for an international medical graduate to get them ready for fellowship.
But we should explain that an overseas trained doctor could go through that pathway of training.
Yes.
If they so wanted to. A lot don't feel they need to because they've been GPs in their own country for long enough.
That's correct, yes.
So they don't go through the training, they just study themselves to sit for the fellowship.
That's right, and the evidence is that the success rate for those people is very poor. If the system's geared up to bring the overseas trained doctors in and we want them to get the fellowship, we then should support them to do so. Why? We haven't paid for the medical training. It's come free to this country. I think we need to acknowledge that in some way and fast track them.
What kind of support would you like to see for overseas trained doctors?
We already know if you're well supported for your fellowship exams, you'll get through and your pass rates are in the 90s. So if we know that, let's look at what we do.
A good example of a support program to help overseas trained doctors gain fellowship is ROVE, the Rural Outreach Vocational Education Program. Our Tassie doctor tells us how he found it.
That came along about between 4 and 6 months before I actually did my college exams. And that was a very, very positive experience. It was well organised. It's basically a lot of support for the overseas doctors, almost in line with the support that a registrar would get. Lots of extra seminars, specifically directed towards passing the college exams. Lots of inputs, seminars, satellite broadcasts, etc. from the GP training program in Tasmania, which was I found very supportive, and it was great. And I'm led to believe that this program's been scrapped, and I cannot believe it because it was a very, very positive experience for me, and it definitely helped me in preparing for my fellowship exams, for sure.
You may be wondering why these doctors put up with all of this and don't just go back home. Well, that's easier said than done. Most have brought their families to Australia and have settled in, and some can even be refugees fleeing their own countries and have no choice but to stay. If you knew that getting registration in Australia would be so difficult, do you think you would have come?
No.
Did you ever consider going back to Canada during this process?
Yes, many times. Part of the challenges we encountered was that it took me so long to jump through the various hoops that by the time I finally encountered the major hurdle, which is actually getting my family medicine qualifications recognized, which was well over a year, and by that time, you know, if you've moved here with your family becomes established. So your kids are in school, your partner's got work, so it becomes much more difficult the longer that you're here to actually go back.
Australia is a fantastic country. I do not regret for one moment that I immigrated to Australia. I just wish the process that I had to go through to bring me where I am today was a little bit easier. It's very taxing on your home life, on personal health, etc., etc.
So after 8 months of trying to practice as a GP, are you glad you persisted?
I am glad, but if you would ask me 2 months ago, I was about to quit.
And go back home?
Actually stopped doing medicine at all.
Oh, really? Wow. Yeah. You got to that point?
Yes, I was really feeling down. My wife was feeling down. It was a very tough time. I remember days when I cried because I felt hopeless.
Stress is a major health issue for many overseas doctors, and we haven't really touched on the cost of it all. But it's the basic entitlements overseas doctors are denied that is probably the most insulting thing. Many can't access Medicare benefits for themselves or their families. It is only available to citizens and permanent residents. After all the hurdles, the waiting, and the money they've spent, these doctors feel this is a mighty slap in the face.
You have a well-trained professional coming to a country, providing a service that in essence no other doctor can or wants to provide, and that you do not have access yourself to Medicare, although you provide a fantastic service under Medicare, you don't have access to that yourself as a person or for your family until you attain permanent residency, which you can only do anywhere after you've passed at least the AMC exams, otherwise the college exams. That fact I found an absolute disgrace. Aussies like knocking the palms. I worked in England before I came to Australia. The first thing that happened when we got off the plane is we were taken to the social security offices. They took all our details. When we could prove that we were going to engage in employment in England, immediately we were put on the NHS system. So that is something that Australia should aspire to.
Our anonymous GP from Tasmania. While the program today has highlighted some of the key challenges doctors face, there are positive stories too. Dr. Ken Wangahu trained in Kenya, and he and his family moved to Waikare in South Australia in 2001. Dr. Wangahu's experience is a good example of how support for overseas doctors can make a world of difference.
The Rural Doctor Workforce Agency got me to come out here and have a look first, even before I made the decision. So I actually had a bit, I spent a few days in Waikare, a few days in Adelaide. And then they also later on paid for my transfer for my expenses to move to South Australia in Waikare.
What other kind of support did you get?
I got a bit of support with my exams. They introduced me to a lawyer and an accountant who then gave me business advice and legal advice, and they paid for that as well. There are various support things in place, some of which I've not used, like education for the spouses. So if my wife decided to go to school, they supported that. And there is a lot more happening now, and it's now formalized for doing the examination. They have education providers, the people that actually train the registrars are now also, as part of their job, training the overseas trained doctors or international medical graduates, whatever you want to call them.
Is the support that you've received or could receive in South Australia typical for the rest of Australia?
No, unfortunately it's not. It's very, very variable. So I think South Australia is exemplary in that way.
Dr. Ken Wangahu in rural South Australia. So we've heard some of the problems today, but what about solutions? The push for national registration of all doctors in 2010 is a start. With only one medical board, differences between the states should disappear, and doctors will be free to work in all states of Australia. But the accountability of the specialist colleges remains a challenge and is unlikely to be addressed in national registration. The Health Minister, Nicola Roxon, didn't have time to be interviewed in the 2 months I was researching this story, so it remains to be seen if any changes to Medicare access will occur. Something we can guarantee, however, is our reliance on overseas trained doctors, especially in the bush. And so we finish the program with some advice from CEO of Rural Health Workforce Australia, Kim Webber.
You need to provide them with support. You want to embed their families and their children into the community so that when they can actually leave, they don't want to. That's a key role for the community and for the Rural Workforce Agency. I had a Rural Workforce Agency say to me, we need to wrap them in love when they're in this rural community, so they really don't want to leave.
And that Health Report special on overseas trained doctors was made by Nikki Phillips. I'm Norman Swan. I'll see you next time.
You've been listening to another ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online, with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. All the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.